Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, back in New York in our studios, broadcasting and video streaming live, and I welcome you. You can watch today's program by going to Ustream channel and then search for Gary Null. For those of you who are listening over the telephone, and there are lots of you, and those of you who would like to listen over the telephone because therefore you could be anywhere. In fact, I had a person last night while I was in an airport flying back to New York City say, oh, I listen all the time because I travel around the United States as a troubleshooter for a company. I listen on my cell phone. I put the earplugs in and download your shows, and that's how I spend a lot of time in airports. That number, 619-550-0869. 619-550-0869. Also, today the program is called Talk Back. Once a week, we take an issue that's important to people, health and nutrition, but also environmental issues. No guests, no in-depth investigative reporting, but I open up the program for the entire hour for callers to share their comments, points of views, questions. That number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I am going to share a lot today on health and nutrition, but an in-depth discussion on estrogen, especially for those women in this audience who are questioning, should I take estrogen therapy? And if so, what kind? The average American, over 10 million American women, are taking synthetic hormone replacement therapy. I'm opposed to that. But estrogen therapies can also benefit your body. William Flum has a really good piece. I'll be sharing that. Then I wanted to get to this last week. I didn't have time. From our environmental segment, we're going to look at Monsanto, farmers' debts, and the suicide epidemic in India, a commentary from Belen Fernandez. Also, Empire of the Senseless, our lethal competence, Jeffrey Sinclair from Counterpunch, and how the government vaccine policy is infected by corruption by Robert Murdoch, MD. And this is at a time, by the way, when hospitals are telling all their help, you must get a flu vaccine. Within the next 2 days, I will write and post a new article, fully referenced, showing you why you should not do that. You should question it, because there's no science supporting its safety and efficacy for anyone. And I've done, I think, 21 articles on the subject of the lack of safety and efficacy in vaccines. And I've produced 3 award-winning documentaries on vaccine. Vaccine Nation, Autism Made in USA, and the newest one, The Silent Epidemic. Let's begin. Vitamin D. The latest research shows that when you have low levels of vitamin D, you're at a greater risk of dying. But when you have the highest levels of vitamin D, you have less chance of dying from all causes of death. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Biomed, Central Public Health. In fact, you could live up to 13.5 years without dying if you have higher levels of vitamin D. So that's good. And this was a multi-study examination. They looked at over 5,000 deaths to determine this. Most people in the wintertime simply do not get enough vitamin D. It's the sunshine vitamin. In the summertime, yes, unless you're indoors a lot. After all, a lot of people start their day early. They commute. Then they get to work. They're inside with artificial light. Then they get out, and they only have maybe an hour or two of sunlight. By that time, a lot of the quality light is gone, and they're generally on their way home, going to a gym, going out to dinner, or doing chores, but just relaxing. That's generally the weekend, and that's not enough time to get our sun. You need sunlight every day. You also need vitamin D every day. My suggestion is 2,000 to 3,000 units a day. I can remember when I was given a call from a producer at NBC Radio Network, and I was asked, would I come on and debate a pro-sugar advocate on the safety or dangers of sugar? And I said, sure. At that time, some of you may remember this time, it was in the early 70s, the health movement was really gaining some traction. There was a whole effort to open up organic markets. People were looking at the amount of soft drinks we were consuming, meat, processed carbohydrates. There were several best-selling books out there on diet. And for whatever reason, I was the one that was asked to come on to debate. Not that I had credentials that would have supported what I was saying. I did not. I did not have my PhD at that time. I was just at the beginning of being a research novice at the Institute of Applied Biology. I certainly wasn't a research fellow and scholar, as I later would be. I was simply a consumer advocate. And I was not afraid to go in and share information. Never attacked anyone. I didn't see the sense in fighting over an issue. Just present your points of view. Respond to those of the other person. Simple. So in a real short period of time, I estimate that I did in the neighborhood of about 300 to 400 debates, sometimes once every week. 1 week it was in Chicago with the AMA. Another week it was in Denver with the Cosmetic and Toiletry Association spokesperson. Because all these industries were afraid of losing business. After all, you lose business when you lose your reputation, when you lose your credibility. And if we can show that their product is dangerous, then that means that conscientious consumers will stop buying their products. This was also the height of the women's health movement. Barbara Seaman and many other leading feminists were questioning women's bodies, that the medical-industrial complex was using women, which was true, and that the children were being exploited by junk food on Saturday morning on commercials, which is also true. So they were hypersensitive. In any case, I did my research, and that following week we went down to NBC Studios, the Bob Kane Show. And there was a person who made all their money for their foundation from the big sugar industry or all the other, I would call them unhealthy foods. That's where they made their money. And so they were trying to claim that there was no danger to sugar whatsoever. And I was showing actual studies that it was linked to cancer, heart disease, diabetes, behavioral problems in young people, violence. And it's interesting when someone's using their PhD from Harvard to attack you. They're not focused upon the studies. They're focused upon why we should believe them, because they have a pedigree. In any case, there would be more of these debates on sugar. Now, I just returned from a trip to England. I wanted to get firsthand what the world's leading scientist on sugar had to say. His name was Professor John Yutkin. He held the first professorship in nutrition at a European university. He said that as little as 6 pounds of sugar a year at the beginning of the 20th century was enough to cause alarm in scientists and physicians in England, and he brought with him an article from an early edition of a British medical publication. It might have been the British Medical Journal. And there it was. I read the article. Now, mind you, at that time we were consuming about 150 pounds of sugar per year, which is never true. That average is completely unscientific. Why? Because I don't consume any processed sugar. Many diabetics don't. People on very restrictive diets don't. People who are very healthy don't. So then someone is consuming our sugar. And it would be like the average American consumes so many cans of cola. Well, I don't consume any. And many others don't. So the people who are actually consuming are consuming far more. And therefore it would skew the numbers. Here is the latest reason to be concerned about sugar. This is from the peer-reviewed journal Nature Communications by the Department of Biology at the University of Utah. Quote, sugar intake in all of its forms has increased rapidly over recent decades. This mass consumption of sweets and sweeteners has shown a strong correlation to a wide variety of lethal diseases. Let me repeat that. A strong correlation to a wide array of lethal, that means diseases that will kill you, and using rodent models to elucidate mechanisms of sugar toxicity, but only at concentrations beyond typical human exposure. In this new study, control mice were mixed with mice being fed human-relevant concentrations of added sugar. The fructose-glucose female exposure 200% increase in death, while fructose gave them a 26% fewer, less offspring. Quote, the findings show that the comparatively low levels of added sugar consumption have substantial negative impacts on mouse survival, competitive ability, and reproduction. So, here we have another study. You don't have to have large amounts of sugar. Just normal amounts of sugar can affect your lifespan. And I think that add that to over 200 additional studies now. So if today we were having a debate on sugar, I would go loaded with all these studies by category, showing you how sugar causes oxidative stress, increases inflammation in the brain, contributes to heart conditions, pancreas conditions, bladder conditions. Sugar, as we are consuming it, is a poison. Omega-3 could contribute to teen psychological disorders if it's deficient. This is from Biological Psychiatry, and it's talking about the modern American diet of highly processed foods. And it's saying that if you do not have enough omega-3 fatty acids, then you can end up with anxiety, hyperactivity, poor cognition, and that's among adolescents. So, the takeaway message is, consume your omega-3 fatty acids. I also debated the meat industry top spokesperson on two occasions. And I remember once I had several studies on the dangers of processed meats, bologna, salami, the meat used on pizzas, and the meat that a lot of Americans consume. I also showed how when you eat a hamburger, the meat in that hamburger could come from 1,000 different cattle. Also, I showed a consumer report where they had taken random samplings of beef and ground beef and found high degrees of E. coli in samples of this ground beef. And then I showed the National Poison Control Center statistics of how many Americans suffer from food poisoning each year. And it's over 100 million. So it's not like a few people. Thousands die, and hundreds of thousands are adversely affected. Many thousands end up in a hospital. And meat is one of the culprits. And not only that, but the other side of meat is that when you heat it at a high temperature, you're turning the meat itself into heterocyclic amines, which can contribute to cancer. In any case, today, we have a lot of problems with meat because at a time when people should be cutting back on meat, and many people are, to their credit, millions of Americans are going meatless one day a week and then seeing how they feel. A lot of public health advocates, holistic dietitians, nurses, physicians, dentists, chiropractors are suggesting going to more fruits and vegetables and grains, of grain-based and legume-based diet for their health. The trouble is the people who are eating meat want more meat to eat than they've ever had before. The idea is that normal serving sizes of meat are no longer adequate. People want huge amounts because of what they're seeing on television. They're going to pay a price for that, unfortunately. Here's the latest on meat. Quote, High intake of red meat linked with risk of type 2 diabetes. This is published in the peer-reviewed journal Advances in Nutrition, and they found an association between a high intake of red meat and an increased risk of type 2 diabetes. Now, the problem is what we call advanced glycation end products. Remember, I've given you the example, take a plump, moist chicken, put it in the oven, 2 hours later, take it out and it's crisp and brown. That's advanced glycation. So when you're eating meat, that's cooked. And also the carbohydrates in a meal, whether it's a potato or a piece of bread or french fry, the combination of those two together make a deadly combination called advanced glycation, glycation, C-A-T-I-O-N, end products or AGEs. And this causes advanced lipooxidation end products. And that can cause all forms of problems inside the body. So the idea is get away from all that meat. An interesting study in the Journal of Nutrition shows that those who drink your herbal teas have a lower risk of death over an 11-year period. They looked at 2,461 participants over 40 years of age, and this was part of the Northern Manhattan study, and they just found that there was a reduction in death. So what the Japanese, the Chinese, the Indians have been doing for a long time, having black tea, red tea, oolong tea, green tea, it lowers the incidence of death. Also, iron may be at the heart of Alzheimer's disease. This is a brand new study at the University of California, Los Angeles, and it suggests that iron accumulation in the brain may be at the core of Alzheimer's. Now, a lot of people believe that the disease is caused by either the beta amyloid proteins in the brain, but also iron is highly oxidative in the brain. And when you're eating a high protein diet, as tens of millions of Americans are, you're getting an awful lot of iron, far more than what the body needs. More positive findings on EPA. An article that appeared in the journal Carcinogenesis reports an inhibitory effect of the long-chain omega-3 polyunsaturated fatty acids, including EPA. Now, you find that in fish oil, and that was used against squamous cell carcinoma, a type of oral and skin cancer. This was done by researchers at Queen Mary University in London, and they found that it made a substantial difference. So you can also get it from flaxseed oil. So get your omega-3s each day. It can help you with cancer. And a lot of people are going in for operations. According to the Journal of the American College of Cardiology, they found there was a reduction in post-operative atrial fibrillation in men and women given the omega-3 polyunsaturated fatty acids and vitamin C and E. They took 2,000 units of the omega-3s and 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C and 400 units of vitamin E 9 days before surgery, and they continued until they were discharged from the hospital. Well, the post-operative atrial fibrillation occurred in 32% of subjects who received a placebo, but just 9% of those that got this group. So you are going to protect your heart if you take the nutrients. But I would have done it differently. I would have suggested they also take 4,000 units of omega-3 fatty acids for a month before and a month after. I would have increased it from 1,000 to 6,000 milligrams of vitamin C. And though it may have to be a little less after a surgery because you don't want anything to interfere with proper clotting and heal, but I would have taken definitely quercetin and coenzyme Q10, and I would have gone up to 1,000 units of vitamin E. Also, coenzyme Q10 improves glycemic controls, lowers cholesterol, and this was in a recent study done at Turin University Medical Sciences, found that 200 milligrams of coenzyme Q10 compared to a placebo for 12 weeks, and they found that it made a substantial difference on glucose control. Well, think of all the people who have diabetes that could help. Now, that's the latest on health and nutrition, and I'll be taking your calls in a moment, but I want to give you some insights from an article by William Falloon in Life Extension called "Enjoy Estrogen's Multiple Benefits While Guarding Against Potential Risks." And I'll quote this. And then I'll take your calls at 888-874-4888. Women who properly replace their estrogen and progesterone usually feel better, sleep better, look better, think better, have stronger bones, firmer muscles, improve endothelial function, and longer lifespans. The downside to all these benefits is concern of increased cancer risk in certain women. Colorectal cancer, compelling evidence indicates that natural progesterone slashes estrogen-induced cellular proliferation, particularly in the breast and endothelium, without the adverse risks associated with synthetic progestin. So listen to what he's saying. He's saying that natural progesterones, yes. Synthetic progesterones, no. And the women who are taking the synthetic hormone replacement therapy have an increased risk of heart attack, stroke, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, dementia, and colorectal cancer. Now, the most conservative estimate I can find is 13%. But that's of 10 million women a year. That means 1.3 million women are putting their lives at risk by taking synthetic hormone replacement therapy. So how do we do this? What's the takeaway message? Well, consuming, at the top of your list, cruciferous vegetables and avoiding meat, ensuring vitamin D, and this is looking at all the unbiased science out there. So natural progesterone cream, along with precise individual doses of natural estrogen, can restore sexual hormones to youthful levels, and that's important. Now, concern about cancer is a reason why more aging women do not restore their hormones to youthful levels. Hormones like estrogen and testosterone affect cell growth and proliferation. So the question is, does this mean aging women should simply accept the sex hormone deficiencies they face as a part of the normal aging? And I see it all the time because I counsel an enormous amount of people. And in right now, I'm seeing with the largest groups of people I'm counseling are women who are in perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause. And as one woman said to me today, she says, I went through perimenopause relatively easy, and that was about 3 years. Then I went through menopause, and that was rough because I had all the symptoms. I was not at that time into natural therapies at all. And now I'm postmenopausal, and I live with this dread. I said, what dread? She said, well, I look in the mirror, and I'm thinking, my youth, my good looks, my hair, all these things that I took for granted, it's gone. And I'm terrified of what I'm going to look 5 years from now. And I said, well, hold on. Don't look at it that way, because there's so much you can do to actually prevent that and actually reverse many of the signs of aging. And because what we know today is this: there are beneficial effects upon cell growth and maturation, as well as favorable ways to affect estrogen metabolism that I'll go into in a little depth here. First, let's get the whole fear of cancer dealt with properly and in proper context. As a woman ages, their cell growth regulatory genes accumulate mutations. Now, you've heard me mention many times that every single thing we do in life is cumulative, but that's positive cumulative and negative cumulative. So let's just say that you try to wind down at night alone or with friends, and so you socially drink, never to get drunk, never even to get a buzz or high, just to kind of take the sharpness off the day's stresses. You've killed about 1 million brain cells, liver cells, kidney cells. You've caused massive oxidative damage in the eyes, which can precipitate macular degeneration. You have constricted blood vessels. You're going to cause varicosities. You're going to cause a lot of broken veins in your ankles and feet. And you've caused oxidative stress in the brain. And that will speed up Alzheimer's. It was interesting. I was once invited to spend some time as a very young nutritionist with a group of very older women, and I took advantage of it because I had never been in that company. Of these were kind of the matriarchs of the debutante set. I was a best-selling author, and I was invited a lot of places. And I was curious as to what their problems were. And almost without exception, their problems were memory problems, skin problems, visual problems, hair falling out problems. Now, typically you could say, well, that's just because they're getting older. You know, they're in their 60s, 70s, and 80s. What do you expect? But I realized, and this would be the basis of a lot of the work I would do at the Institute of Applied Biology, that it was not from normal aging. This was from the individuals who spent a great deal of their time socializing, and everybody drank. Now, again, differentiate those who are young and frequently drink recklessly. And even if you go downtown, if you went downtown tonight in the meatpacking district, you would find dozens of restaurants, nightclubs, mainly young people, and some of the artist community of the village, because it's a very up and growing area. They're going to be drinking, and they're not going to be social drinking. They're going to put down 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 glasses of wine or whiskey or beer. That's not a little bit. And they're going to do this regularly. So on one level, they may be 25, but biochemically, their cells are going to be about 45, 50, because they're starting the pattern of drinking and socializing younger. And they're doing it to a greater degree. Like binge drinking now in colleges is virtually epidemic. So people are not just drinking, they are drinking massive amounts. Well, how in the world is the body supposed to recover from that? The answer is, it does not. I want to get this out of the way so people understand. When you damage the body, it's damaged. Now, you can wake up, overcome your hangover, feel fine, look in the mirror, seem all right, maybe some bloodshot eyes, that'll go away. But the damage that's been done, you will not see. It's invisible because it's your cells. But because you were given so many in a liver, which can rejuvenate about 60% of itself, in your kidneys, but you have two of them. So now you look, and what is the number one disease of the kidneys? It's non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Well, that's from sugar, and that's from high-protein diets and fructose. Well, because we're eating massive amounts. We have two generations now in American history that have not been given the instructions or given the discipline and the insistence, eat right. They're spoiled. They eat what they want, drink what they want, as much as they want. So this is where we have, for the first time in American history, these massive epidemics of obesity, mainly in younger people. So here were these women, and once, there were about 22 of them, and they met socially all the time. And one of them they were all wonderful, by the way. They all had wonderful personalities. They were funny. They were gracious. And I was asked 1,000 questions. Okay. And the woman whose apartment they met at over on Park Avenue, her husband was out of shape, didn't want to listen to any of this, and had his own whole area that he stayed in. And they would have little dinners and get-togethers, and they would drink, and some smoke, some did not. But it was all the time. And when I started doing research on alcohol, even in small amounts, that's when I saw it kills cells. I wrote a book on this, and early on in my career, on alcohol and how destructive it is. So then today, I realized, gee whiz, that's the cumulative effect. So I was looking at people who otherwise would play tennis or try to keep themselves fit, but they drank. So the limiting factor was the alcohol. And I've since developed this concept that is that you're always going to be limited in life by your weakest point. If your weakest point is that you exaggerate or you lie or you manipulate or use people or you're undisciplined, no matter what else you do right, that is going to interfere. The same is true in nutrition. It's called the laws of limited nutrient intake. You could take all the vitamin C in the world, but if you're not taking enough vitamin D, then you're going to be end up adversely affected. Your bones, your digestion, your immune system will all be adversely affected because you're not getting your vitamin D. So the key is to try to do as much right as possible. So anyhow, I tell you that simply because a whole generation has grown up with the idea that you can do things in moderation that are bad or toxic, but because you did them in moderation, somehow the body is self-correcting, self-rejuvenating, and you won't have to pay a price for it. That's not true. If you doubt me, go to California. Look at all the women in their 30s who started being sun worshippers and laying on the beach all the time or always out in the water when they were in their teens. Today, their skin looks like worn chaps of a cowboy. It is leathery, wrinkled, and all the Botox and all the peels in the world is not going to change that. So that's what we have to understand, that these cell growth regulating genes accumulate mutations, and the more we do that's not healthy, the more mutations we accumulate. And aging reduces the ability to rapidly repair this damage. So when genes that regulate cell division undergo mutation, the result can be uncontrolled cell proliferation that can result in tumor formation. Aging women experience a dramatic rise in cancer incidence, even as their estrogen levels plummet. Now, in the presence of changes to genes involved in the growth and proliferation of breast tissue cells, estrogen can promote cancer cell propagation. Well, here's the good news. By ingesting vitamin D and cruciferous vegetables and other like sea vegetables, you can help prevent and even repair gene mutations and thus reduce cancer risk. Now, all women, including those who maintain euphoestrogen levels, should make sure they are ingesting optimal amounts of vitamin D. Why? Because vitamin D protects against breast cancer. That's not in controversy at all. It blocks the signals that stimulate cancer cell growth. It enhances the signals that inhibit cancer cell growth, and it favorably alters gene regulators of the cell cycle. In fact, studies have found a strong correlation between blood levels of vitamin D and the risk of breast cancer. So that's one of the things that you can do that's easy, and everyone should be doing that. The second is, I mentioned cruciferous vegetables. I'm a big believer that we should be consuming cruciferous vegetables on a daily basis. What are they? Broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, kale, mustard. These are all able to inhibit the formation of dangerous breakdown products of estrogen that promote cancer growth. Now, cruciferous vegetable compounds can also help activate vital enzyme pathways responsible for neutralizing the many carcinogens we are inevitably exposed to each day. And one of the best studied cruciferous vegetable compounds is called indole, N-I-N-dole, D-O-L-E, indole 3-carbinol, carb, C-A-R-B, inol, I-N-O-L, or I-3-C. Women seeking to restore youthful hormone balance should make sure to obtain enough of the I3C from their diet. And the reason this is that this I3C increases levels of a less potent estrogen metabolite called 2-hydroxyestrione with lower affinity for the estrogen receptor, while reducing levels of an estrogen metabolite that is more potent and binds with greater affinity, which is a bad estrogen, to the estrogen receptor called 16-alpha hydroxyestrone. So here's the takeaway message. High levels of 16-alpha hydroxyestrone is bad. Lower levels of 2-hydroxyestrone are good because they're associated with a greater way of protecting you from cancer. And so just remember, 16 bad, 2 good. Meat, that's 16. Pesticides, stimulating, hormone mimicking, 16. Vegetables, 2. And to emphasize the critical importance of indole-3 carbinol, just understand that aging women still produce estrogen. All the estrogen in women's bodies, both endogenously produced and supplemental, can follow one of two primary metabolic pathways in the body. If estrogen is converted to 16-alpha hydroxyone, then the risk of breast cancer is increased. If, on the other hand, the estrogen is converted to 2-hydroxyestrone, then the risk of cancer, such as that of the breast and cervix, is decreased. So indole-3 carbinol can readily be obtained just by eating your vegetables. In fact, there was a big study, 10,000 Italian women were watched for over 5 years, and they looked at everything in the diet, and they found that the women who consumed the most amount of cruciferous vegetables and who were premenopausal, they were much healthier and did not suffer the same consequences as those who didn't. So eat your vegetables. Also, soy can reduce, organic non-GMOs can reduce the risk of breast cancer by twice. And meat increases your risk of breast cancer, all kinds of meats, and heavily cooked meat even more, and processed meat like bologna and salami even more. And when you start getting older, you really increase your risk of cancer. So you got to understand that. Fish oil also protects women. And also, there's one thing that you should be consuming, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. The body's bombarded with carcinogens on a daily basis. Now, these cancer-causing agents include pesticides, overcooked foods, alcohol, food additives, fungal mutagens, industrial pollutants. And while avoiding carcinogens is difficult for a lot of people based upon their social activity, there is a compound, a plant extract, that facilitates the detoxification and removal of these dangerous substances from your body. It is called D-glucarate, glu, carate, C-A-R-A-T-E. You're finding it in grape, fruit, apples, oranges, broccoli, Brussels sprouts. D-glucarate has been shown to protect against cancer-causing agents by supporting detoxification and removal of dangerous chemicals, and also by protecting against mutating effects of these carcinogens to induce a DNA damage. So D-glucarate functions by inhibiting the beta-glucoenzyme, protecting the critical detoxification mechanism. So, and there are a lot of studies on this. This shows how good it is. Also, I suggest all the women that I know and counsel, take your lignans. L-I-G, nans, N-A-N-S, lignans. Why? It protects your breast. And the lignans protect against breast cancer, and especially in premenopausal women. In fact, there was a study of more than 3,000 women, and they found that those that took or consumed the largest amount of lignans had a 34% reduction in breast cancer. There was another study in Italy that showed the mechanisms for this effect, and the research indicates that higher blood levels of phytoestrogens called androlactone, the primary lignan derived by the body from flaxseed and flaxseed oil, are associated with a lower risk of breast cancer. So, I would say, one tablespoon a day should do it. And then green tea. Green tea has lots of anti-cancer properties, mainly EGCG. And this is the EPI, E-P-I, GALL, G-A-L-L, O-CAT, O-C-A-T, etichin, K gallate. A little long name, but that's what you get when you get your green tea. I'm suggesting anywhere from 100 to 500 milligrams a day, plus your fish oil, plus lots of berries, and you're going to reduce your risk of death. So remember, estrogen does far more than ease menopausal symptoms. It protects your brain, your bones, your arteries, your muscles, your eyes, your skin, and your well-being. There's just a difference between women who are taking synthetic estrogen and those taking natural. Remember, even natural estrogen drugs stimulate breast cell proliferation. So that's why I'm looking to make sure that you have a diet that promotes natural estrogen and also natural progesterone creams to protect the cells against excess stimulation that estrogen can sometimes cause. I'm Gary Nall. Now it's time for your calls. I'm in my studio in New York City. I've been on a long trip helping a lot of people. And on tomorrow's program, you'll have a chance to hear some of the people who had medically irreversible conditions, meaning they were selected because there is nothing in the current medical armamentarium that will help these individuals. And yet after just 30 days, some remarkable improvements. But we're going to take a brief break, come back, and then take your calls at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Welcome all of you. We have people all over the world. We have people in more than 150 countries listening right now and sharing the information. Just a side note, right now in the state of Washington, people receive their ballots to vote on a proposition that would allow food to be labeled if it's genetically engineered. Leaders say that the Grocery Manufacturers Association and Pepsi-Cola and all these major companies that use genetically modified foods like their corn syrup and wheat products, soy products, they don't want this bill to pass because they know that 93% of consumers have shown they won't buy a product if it's labeled genetically engineered. So we have several things we can do to help the people in the state of Washington. First, take the article that Richard Gale and I have written. He's our producer and a scholar. It is definitive. Any argument that is pro-GMOs, we completely deconstruct the argument. Secondly, we show you what's wrong with GMOs, and we show you the actual science on GMOs, and we document it, it's footnoted. And then also recommend that they watch Seeds of Death. Now, just this particular audience alone, as single downloads, over 500,000. And then how many people they share it with, we could only imagine. It must be in the multi-millions. So get people to watch the documentary, because all the leading advocates in the world that we filmed in India and Canada and Germany and Scotland and France and England, they're all in here. It's a must-watch film. And this way we can help them in this important time. Let's say hello now to Edward from Ridgewood, New Jersey. Hi, Edward.
Yes, hello. Good evening.
How can I help you?
We'd like to hear on your broadcast during the week more about a science of anti-aging. I'm sure you have a large amount of information about that. Most people like myself don't have the time to read long medical books of 1,500 pages. I listen to you most days. I've been listening to you, I think, since about 15 years now. One thing we have in common is West Virginia. I'm a graduate of West Virginia Wesleyan. But I think you're losing your listeners on BAI during the week. There's too little information about what we'd like to hear about. A really comprehensive science on anti-aging. And there's just too much political diatribe, which is useless and irrelevant. Guests who have no relevance to us.
Okay, well, let's go through what you've stated. I'm not going to hold it against you from being from West Virginia. But first, if you've been listening to me for 15 years, then you know that I have written many articles on how to slow down and reverse and prevent the aging process and the diseases of aging. I haven't written a 1,500-page book, but I have produced multiple documentaries, most of which are free up on the website, such as Power Aging, Age is Only a Number, How to Live Forever, Power Foods, and Mind Power. Those are just five documentaries alone that would explain the aging process, which is relatively simple. I talk about it all the time, almost daily, where everything we do is cumulative, either good or bad. So if we pay attention to the choice we're making and we just ask ourselves, is it reasonable to me or anyone else to expect a good outcome if I'm going to drink this coffee, I'm going to eat this food, this particular sandwich, I've got the gluten here, the dairy there. Then when you wake up one day and you realize that you are biologically older than your chronological age, then you say, well, then it wasn't the fact that Gary hasn't been talking more than any human being in the history of America about health and nutrition and aging. He has, in 28,000 broadcasts, over 5,000 lectures, over 100 documentaries, over 100 books, over 660 articles. It's that somewhere you said you just couldn't, you know, be bothered by all this. So the issue should be what you're looking at when you look back in the mirror to yourself. The issue is not me and a lack of information because of anything. Is just now 41 minutes and telling women how to protect their breast. And not only protect their breasts, but also what will protect the breasts will also protect their brains and protect their eyes, because it's all stemming from oxidative stress, inflammation. So it doesn't matter that you know 100 different things that cause inflammation. The idea is that you know that inflammation in and of itself is bad. So you either take things that are inflammatory or those that are anti-inflammatory, and then how to repair the damage, of which we cover every single day. So I don't know what you've been listening to. But the second issue you ask is more interesting to me, because as long as I've been on the radio, I have always balanced the information, which the majority of which is health and nutrition. But also, let's just take a look at some of the things that you would consider politically irrelevant and of no use to anyone. Well, we helped lead the effort to help ban DDT. I was the only radio show in the United States doing that, and even helping write articles on it, and then led the charge after Rachel Carson's death. But in 1972, we were already a national movement, and I was always talking about that. Separately, helped lead the effort on radio with over 100 broadcasts on Paul Rudishan's Vietnam veterans groups to help acknowledge that millions of American GIs, over 3.5 million, have been exposed to the defoliant 245T Agent Orange, and therefore many of their injuries and their biochemical maladies were caused by this. I have, since 1991, done at least 500 discussions on Gulf War syndrome, and that it was caused by depleted uranium, experimental vaccines, and the other issues that they were impacted. Like, for example, they had an enormous amount of exposure to biological weapons in the Scud missiles that we were told didn't exist. And also that led to three separate documentaries. Think of all the programs that I've done on expressing freedom of choice and gone out there and fought, including during the 1980s, where had we not led that fight, had I not gone to 52 cities, then the Duchesne Amendment would not have passed and you would not have been able to take supplements whether you chose to or not. And I had to debate the head of the FDA. I had to debate the head of the National Cancer Institute. I had to debate with Congressman Rogers and Proxmire in Washington, D.C., in order to show that the legislation they were passing was not in the interest of the consumer. I've just completed a major series on fascism. I do a program that shows we have become a police state. Now, you can choose to find that of no interest. You can choose to see that our environment has been exploited. We lead the nation in environmental shows. And these are all dealing with public health issues on the environment, Agent Orange, also gas hydrofracking, closing down nuclear power plants, getting people organized, demonstrating in front of the governor's mansion. And thus far, with Harvey Wasserman and a good group of people, we've managed to close four nuclear power plants. Instead of having 104, we have 100, and we believe we can close in Endpoint, which would protect 20 million Americans living in the 50-mile radius of New York City. We led the demonstrations of 8,000 of our listeners down to Washington, D.C., with listeners and people around the United States against Monsanto. And we take on the FDA. We take on those people who in any way would use the political system, like the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, to pass 20,000 laws, which they have done, over 35 years, which they have done, which undermine our freedoms and put us at risk. So I will continue to take on these issues because the average American today is more vulnerable than ever before. Because when we were talking about global warming, nobody wanted to hear it. When we talked about the dangers of living in non-sustainable areas, nobody wanted to hear it. When we talked about the abuses in the medical industrial complex and how the number one cause of death was American medicine, nobody wanted to hear it. When we talked about how 700,000 Americans die each year and over 10 million injured by American medical mistakes, nobody wanted to hear it. Yet these are highly political issues because the politics of medicine, the politics of environment, the politics of our healthcare system, the politics of Obamacare, all of these impact us, whether we choose to find it relevant or not. Because if I can't stop, or all of us cannot stop, the pollution of our environment, then we end up polluting our bodies. So if you care about the children, you want to stop obesity in children. You want to stop adult diabetes in children because it's epidemic levels. We're the fattest nation in the world. That's political because we have to go after the people who are not protecting us, not telling us the truth, allowing children to be manipulated by what they see on television, and then treat us as if we're nothing more than commodities. When we as a nation have been commodified and commercialized, when our freedoms of habeas corpus, our freedoms of speech have been nullified, when we're being spied upon, which this show talked about in depth on at least seven occasions, when we don't have a forum for the Chris Hedges and the Rabbi Michael Lerners and the other outstanding people who put themselves at risk by telling us the truth, then the issue is not that this doesn't impact people. It's that it definitely impacts people, and these are the voices. These are the voices, and my forum is one that allows them an opportunity. But always with every single show, you're given positive solutions. I'm hopeful that after this, you'll go back and do your homework and take a look at all the information that you have if you just choose to use it. But at the same time, if I live in this society, and if I'm not out there fighting on the local issues to organize people on environmental or health issues or human rights issues, then this program is not serving the mandate that it has been serving for a long time. But I understand fully that there are people in the audience who say, I only like what you say about health. That's fine. Then what I give you on health is more than any other program in the United States or in the history of the United States. But if you like environmental issues, we give you more on the environment. Like the other day, the first radio program in the United States to give you the 46 reasons that the meltdown in Fukushima is now affecting us and will get it worse. We will continue to protect our environment and be a voice of reason and a voice that has already been substantially limited in even the alternative media. Turn on MSNBC. Turn on many of the other liberal shows. You won't hear them going after vaccines. That's an important issue because people have been damaged by them, and then the damage has been denied. So we fight for them. I'm a consumer advocate. I'm not just a nutritionist. But then again, you knew that, didn't you? And I also am a human rights advocate. And you knew that, even though you graduated from Wesleyan. So you know these things, and why don't you look for what you can use in the way of resources? Because every day, I'm going to keep giving you more and more information, Edward, and take what you want, leave the rest be, but for everyone else who feels that they're empowered by the information on these social issues and these political issues, it's not rubbish, it's not worthless, it's empowering. So I thank you for your call, and I wish you all the best. We're out of time. Well, we have a lot more shows to share, so we'll come back and open it up on our next talkback. Thank you all for listening. Now let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, that was a very, very good answer to that for that caller.
He's from West Virginia. Look, in West Virginia, when your mother, when your mother and father are brother and sister, and you got 18 toes in your left foot.
Easy. Well, I just got back from the month-long retreat, and I have to tell you, I was sitting at a desk with a woman. And, you know, you're talking about anti-aging and the menopause protocol. And, you know, I've been on the menopause protocol for some time since I went into menopause and then turned around and reversed it. So I don't think about my age because I'm too busy thinking about how to make the world a better place and how to enjoy myself and you know, enhance my career and learn and just enjoy. And there was a woman sitting across the desk from me, and we were talking about the importance of exercise. She says, well, I'm going to be 60 soon, so I guess I have to get the DVDs for the older folk. I looked her square in the eye, and I said, hang on. I said, I'm the same age as you. And she was floored that I was around the same age as she was. And I said, I don't think about age. I'm doing what I understand is right for me, not only just physiologically. I mean, we have to correct the cells, and we have to make sure we're nurturing the body so it can work on our behalf. That's the genius of what you're talking about, is when you give the body what it needs to work on your behalf, it will, and it will heal.
But, Luann, you also know that you can give the body everything you want, but if you don't give the mind and the heart and the soul what it needs, Then it's an empty vessel receiving it. You might as well have taken the bottom out of a glass and pour water in it and say you're thirsty. As much effort as we do on nutrition, that's exactly how much we do on behavior. And when people have a kind of a rigid anal behavior, then all the information in the world that easily could protect and prevent disease, they're not going to use because it's an attitudinal issue. And at the end of the day, attitude is epigenetically toxic. It turns off cells. As you saw in remarkable improvements in people after 30 days from medically irreversible conditions because we work mainly on behavior. So
that's true.
Each person will learn their lesson when they're ready to. Thank you, Luann.
Okay.